Smith v. Duffy, Mr. Larum.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. Norman Larum on behalf of the Plaintiff Appellant, Jack Smith. I'd like to begin in my allotted time by focusing on paragraph 5.6 of the 2002 settlement agreement, which is discussed at length in the party's briefs.
Where is that?
It's at page 11 of the appendix, Judge. It's platted in paragraph 26 of the complaint. In the appellant's brief, it's located at page 8.
Mm-hmm. This is E you're pointing to?
Yes, Your Honor.
Mm-hmm. Okay, go ahead.
It's paragraph 5.6 of the 2002 settlement agreement, and it's entitled Disclosure. It's contained in Article 5, which is entitled Representations and Warranties Between the Parties. This particular provision contains an exchange of warranties between the parties that the related documents and the agreement itself do not contain any untrue statement of fact or omits a fact necessary to make the statements contained herein or therein in light of the circumstances in which they were made not misleading. There is a promise that there is no fact which has not been disclosed in writing to Smith or in Ventec, of which Dade or CRC is aware or has knowledge, which adversely affects or could reasonably be anticipated to adversely affect Dade's or CRC's performance hereunder or under any of the related documents or the transactions contemplated by this agreement or the related documents.
Were these negotiations conducted face-to-face at any time, or was it all by?
It was all by telephone.
All by telephone.
And correspondence. One of the related documents is the May 3, 2002 letter from Defendant Duffy, where he warrants that the Dade stock exists, that it will continue to exist, that there was a 4-to-1 split authorized by the Board of Directors, and that my client was, in fact, guaranteed the balance of his term of a 10-year term option for 20,000 shares of stock. The negotiations, as evidenced by the transcript, indicate that there was a dispute as to whether or not my client was to receive or did receive that 10-year term stock option or stock options from the 1999 contracts. The defendant, Dade, and the agents confirmed that he was entitled to the balance of that term when this contract was signed, and even before, on May 3, 2002.
Now, was Mr. Smith directly involved in the negotiations? I noticed, I saw somewhere an accountant was involved as well.
Both Mr. Smith and his accountant participated in the negotiations, yes.
This language to which you refer refers to the termination agreement, doesn't it?
I'm sorry, Judge.
Doesn't this language to which you refer, doesn't that refer to the termination agreement?
The termination agreement, Judge, is the settlement agreement. The parties settled their differences arising from contracts that they entered into
These
in 19...
These defendants are not parties to the termination.
No, but they are agents. And the reason that this disclosure...
They didn't sign as agents.
No, but they participated as agents. In fact, the defendant signed the letter, executed the letter, that's defined as a related document, which is covered by this disclosure and warranty statement. In other words, one of the defendants signed the letter that became part of the contract, attesting or warranting to the stock and the options, which is as much a part of the contract.
So what would your client have done if they'd said, you know, we're thinking about a Chapter 11?
He would not have entered into this agreement.
Why?
Because he viewed the stock options, his stock options, as
Would he think they're on the verge of bankruptcy? They're going to give him more money or something like that?
Well,
I don't understand.
He could have waited to see what developed, but he would not have entered into
What's the evidence he would have waited after they say, you know, we're thinking of bankruptcy?
Well, the evidence is contained in the transcript itself, where he tells them, and as well as other documents, he tells them the options are an essential part.
What did he think they meant when they talked about an exit strategy?
Well, what he thought was that they were going to go public. Somebody was going to come
That's
and merge.
That's not an exit strategy.
Well, it depends on your interpretation.
Exit strategy means, you know, we're out.
Well,
we're out of here.
But not every bankruptcy would include a complete discharge of his options or
sure,
the.
Sure, that's why I'm saying if they said, look, we need an exit strategy, we could do X, Y, Z, we could do Chapter 11 and so on, I don't see how that's going to affect his thinking. He must have known that was on the table. As you said, we discussed it in the previous case, in Chapter 11, shareholders, you know, usually get hurt, but they often come out with something, so he might have said, yeah, I know you're in trouble, and you might do this, might do that. I don't know why he would have changed his mind about the agreement.
But the exit strategy comment was in the context of others.
He got other benefits from the agreement, didn't he?
He did, but what he gave up was far more valuable.
He got what? He got $1,400,000?
Right, and what he gave up was far more valuable.
Well, it didn't look valuable with an exercise price of $66 when the
with the promise of a split. With the promise of a split.
If they had said to him, you know, actually we're thinking of liquidating, you'd be back here with another lawsuit in which you said, oh, they exaggerated the difficulties of the company, made the stock options look. Right. If they had mentioned bankruptcy, that would make the stock options look less valuable, and that would tend to dampen his desire for them. Right.
Well, the initial demand was almost $5 million to settle these disputes, and it was with the promise of the options. And quite frankly, I don't understand this whole notion about warnings. What were they warning him? That we're going to deceive you? We're going to warn
I don't understand what you're saying. Look, what my point is, if they start tossing around the word bankruptcy, that makes the stock options look even more valueless than they appear to be on the basis of the discrepancy between the stock price and the exercise price. So how is it that somehow if he had been told that, I thought you were going to say if he'd been told that, he would have given up the options, but he would have demanded more than the $1,400,000.
Well, he did. He would have, yes.
That's what you're saying?
Yes, that was in the transcript. That was in the documents. He lowered his demand in order, because of the options, he lowered his demand. The initial demand was $4.5 million.
These options seem almost worthless on their face, considering.
Well, they weren't with a 4-to-1 split, because that would have brought the value of his options almost close to a strike price. But what he knew was that the company was growing and the company was going to get out of whatever financial difficulty it was in and go public. It did go public. It came out of the...
Well, nobody told him that.
But he knew that because he was working with Dade for 4 years before this. He was aware of their products. He worked with these people. They were his business partners for certain products. He knew they were going to go public. And they
why
did go
public.
Stock,
why would a stock split affect the options?
Because they were trying to tell him that his stock was actually more valuable. That was the purpose of the letter. The board of directors has approved a 4-to-1 split, giving him more stock,
no,
bringing it down.
Is it clear that the reduction of the stock price incident to a split affects options? Affects your option price?
Sure it does. Absolutely. The strike price, then goes from, what, $60-some down to 15.
I'm just asking whether this is the normal consequence of a split.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. And that's what they represented to him in that May 3 letter.
I'm not sure I understand that.
But it's, well, because there's more stock. And
sure there's
so
more
there's more stock and his strike price goes down.
The strike price, too, doesn't it?
Well, the value of the stock then goes from whatever it is down to close to what he had. I mean, everybody agrees to that in this case. I mean, that's what they told him in the transcript. In the transcript, they tell him, the defendants tell him, once the split is effective, and they knew that it would never be effective.
Seems very odd. Why would dividing by four? I mean, this is Judge Cudahy's question. I don't understand. If you divide by four, the price of the stock goes down initially 75%. How does that help you exercise your options?
Because it brings the value of the stock closer to a strike price. Again, he's got 6 years.
The option price is in the 60s. The stock price is 8 or 10 or something. How does reducing the stock price from 8 to 2 make it easier to exercise your options?
What they told him was that once the split was effective, the value of the stock would be closer to his strike price.
But please explain the arithmetic to me. You have a stock worth $8. You split it four ways. Now you have four shares, each worth $2. How does that get you near a $66 strike price?
Well, it gives him more options. That's what
I don't understand you. What gives him more options, but the price is $60-odd. How does it, and that's getting farther away from the stock price.
It was just the opposite, Judge, and they discussed this.
The arithmetic, how splitting stocks gets you closer to your strike price.
It gave him 80,000 shares.
But each of them is worth a quarter of what it was worth before because it's a split.
His strike price would come down. That's
why
what it would
his
be.
Strike price come? Is that in the contract?
Yes, by the operation of the option itself.
Suppose it comes down 75%. That doesn't change the ratio of the stock price of the option price to the stock price.
Judge, I can only go by what's in the record.
Well, it doesn't make any sense, does it? If it does, explain the sense of it.
Well,
how dividing two numbers by four changes the ratio between the two numbers.
It would give him 80,000.
But they'd be worth only a quarter of what his 20,000 shares were worth, each of them. So his total stock value doesn't increase at all. It doesn't change.
Judge, that's not what he was told.
But that's ridiculous.
It's not what he was told.
Well,
it might be.
Give me a reason how any rational person could think that dividing two numbers by four changes the ratio between them.
If there was a 4-to-1 split, then he would have options not on 20,000 but on 80,000 shares.
Sure, but it's an option price. It's either 60. Suppose it's $60. Suppose it falls from $60 to $15.
And his
But this price of the stock has fallen also by 75%.
The estimate, according to the document that he was given from a private investor, was about, at the time, $12, $11 a share. The assumption was that the price of the stock would stay the same.
Was what?
Would stay the same. In other words, the value of the stock would not drop. The assumption
that is even more ridiculous than anything I've heard.
Judge,
that's like saying to a company, "Well, look, if your stock is selling for $100, issue three times as many shares, so you've increased the number of shares by four, and you will have multiplied the market capitalization of your company by four." Because the shares will still be worth $100, but you'll have four times as many. That can't be right.
Well, one of the defendants
make no
in the transcript says to him...
Think about it for a moment, would you?
Judge?
Think about it and tell me what sense it makes.
It doesn't
to say that simply by splitting shares, you can. Now, if you have shares, you know, like a $10,000, so then splitting will not reduce the value of each share proportionately because there's more of a market for shares that sell at a lower price. We're down in $8 and $10, and I don't see how multiplying the number of shares can increase the market capitalization fourfold.
This was a closely held corporation at the time, and the assumption in your example is that the value of the shares would go down with the split. And that's not what the defendants told you.
What's the point of a stock split for the company that is in very bad shape, as they said this one was?
Well,
that's why
Mr. Smith went for the deal.
Let me ask the question. I said you have a reverse split when the price of the stock gets low enough, and this stock was going down, wasn't it? It wasn't going up.
Well, this is a closely held company. It had not yet gone public. It had tremendous market presence. It had fabulous products.
Well, that's not what they told him, for God's sake.
Well, no, they I don't know what they, I mean, they were telling him two different things. They were telling him there would be a stock split. They were telling him that the value would get closer to his strike price. It's right in the transcript. They give him a letter warranting that the stock would be there when, in fact, on April 30, they signed an agreement with their creditors, knowing that all the stock would be wiped out and the options would be wiped out. They knew all during this process that consideration would not be there.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Lehrer. Mr. Silverman?
May it please the Court. Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Michael Silverman, and I represent the defendants in this matter.
Maybe you can answer this question about the effect of the stock split.
I'm not sure that I can answer the question because I don't understand the plaintiff's response or the allegation that he was deceived because of the plan. The portion of the surreptitious transcript that Mr. Smith made that he's referring to is A-172, and Mr. Allen, one of the defendants, says there's a stock split. The board authorized a stock split. It's a 4-to-1 split. Divide by 4. So I don't understand where the plaintiff is coming from and how he can make those allegations.
What is this a transcript of?
Mr. Smith made secret recordings of his telephone conversations with two of the defendants. He never spoke with Mr. Duffy.
These legal recordings, in many states, you're forbidden to record even a conversation to which you're a party.
I believe that under the North Carolina law in that regard, Judge, if one party agrees to the recording, it's not illegal.
That is illegal. Okay,
I believe that's the case in some states, and I believe that's the case in North Carolina.
Now, what I find disturbing about the case, about your part of the case, is this is a 12B6, right?
Yes.
So, isn't it difficult to dispose of a fraud case without any evidence, unless you're treating these transcripts as evidence, even though it is a 12B6.
Well, Judge, in a 12B6 case, if the complaint relates to or refers to other documents that are important to the allegations in the complaint, as is the case here, those documents can be used as part of the pleadings
so
that the court will look at.
Is this in effect summary judgment? Or?
I don't believe that it does, Judge. I believe that in many 12B6 cases, like in some of the securities cases we cited in our brief, the court is able to look at other disclosures that were made in considering whether or not to grant a 12B6 motion. I'd like to make a point about the option letter, if I may. That's at page A-136, and Mr. Lehrer claims that, or Mr. Smith claims, that Mr. Duffy, who was the chief financial officer, warranted that the Dade Behring stock would continue to exist and that that letter guaranteed a balance of the term of the stock options. That letter said nothing of the sort. That letter does nothing other than confirm the existence of previously granted stock options and talks about the fact that the board approved a stock split and says if the split is consummated, it'll be a, you know, 4-to-1 stock split. There is no warranty. There's no representation about anything in the future. There were no discussions with Mr. Duffy on the subject. And, in fact, the option plan itself, which is in the papers at page A29, at paragraph 16, says that the plan can be canceled or terminated by the board at any time. So under the plan itself, the options may not continue. There's no reason for anyone to believe that there was a guarantee going forward. Getting back to the basics of what this case is about, this is a case in which Mr. Smith is suing individual employees of the company for what is, in essence, what he argues, a breach of that warranty at paragraph 5.6. He's seeking millions of dollars from the individual employees, and he's not entitled to that. The pleadings clearly belie his claim about what he was told. As the court recognized, he was told, and there are statements in paragraph 28 affirming what he was told, for example, paragraph 28K, that Dade Behring was going to restructure its debt with a change in ownership. This comes from the transcripts, and that's why we think it's appropriate to use those transcripts in the 12B6. And there are four or five other allegations that I can address in a bit. The situation here just doesn't give rise to a fraud claim. There's no evidence that anybody intended Mr. Smith to take the stock options. In fact, the record clearly shows that the effort of the defendants was to get Mr. Smith not to assign value to the stock options. He's disappointed because he believed that he was going to get rich from possibly going public in the future. But given all the disclosures, that's simply not a reasonable thing for him to assume.
Well, but your opponents complain about the lack of disclosure of the Chapter 11, not of what was said.
Right, except that what was said are very relevant predicates to the disclosure of to the impact of the poor financial condition of the company. And a number of cases we cited in our briefs, like the Tower Securities litigation and the Keeney case, have a similar sort of fact pattern in which the plaintiffs say that the defendants didn't tell them that there was a bankruptcy, though the defendants disclosed a significant amount of bad financial condition. And, Your Honor, in the Tower case, the court held that the failure to disclose the bankruptcy wasn't relevant, because there had been so much disclosure of other information in regard to the bad financial condition of the company. It's clear that the bankruptcy planning simply wasn't material. Okay, Smith admits in his complaint that he was told Dade Behring is financially distressed, the options are valueless, the shares may be valueless. I'm quoting from paragraph 28. Dade's going to want some exit strategy. Dade Behring would have to restructure its debt, et cetera. Mr. Smith cites to a letter in his brief and refers to it in his complaint from the accountant that he was working with, who says, and it's at page 827 of the appendix, he says, irrespective of Dade's action or financial condition, we want the stock options and we don't understand why you think they're valueless. He clearly knew what was going on, and he clearly had no right to rely on his guess that sometime in the future the options would have some value, particularly when those options could be canceled at any time. Article 5.6 doesn't change the analysis. It's not a warranty that can be imposed upon the individual employees of the company.
Did the defendants have options too?
The defendants did have options. I believe. I'm not entirely sure.
And then, so they did well.
No, they lost their option.
They lost their options.
Everyone's
too.
Equity in the company was canceled.
Right.
Right. So what happened in the bankruptcy plan is they basically did what Mr. Smith was told, that for equity swap.
The fact that you said that, maybe I misunderstood. Did you say Smith had lost millions? I thought relief he would be seeking would be that somehow he would say that if he had learned about the bankruptcy, he would have written off the options and insisted on some larger cash payments. Is that the stake in the case?
It's not entirely clear, but Smith claims that by not being able to have the options going on into the future, and this is why that 4-for-1 stock split discussion I think occurs, he missed out on being able to participate in an IPO involving the stock or to get any money out of the stock options. He cites in his pleadings that he's lost $10 million in value in the stock options. Right?
But you say no one got the stock. No one's stock options survived the bankruptcy. Isn't that what you said?
No, the stock options did not survive the bankruptcy. It's possible that New Date issued other stock options, that there was a new stock plan, et cetera, but the bankruptcy, as you know, canceled out all the equity in the company. It's important, I think, to note that Mr. Smith cites no cases that support his argument that the individual defendants can be held liable for either the breach of warranty or any of the circumstances.
Is it his theory that he is, as part of management, he wouldn't have left, he would have remained, and therefore after the reorganization and after the new company issues stock options to its management, he would have received stock options? Is that the theory?
I don't believe so. In fact, he was not part of the management of the company. He would had been granted options only as part of the 1999 agreement that he had executed with the company.
That was involving a patent?
Pardon?
A patent?
It was involving allocation of some patents, the acquisition of his company, allocation of some patent rights, some licensing and whatnot.
So these folks he was talking with were management. He was not a part of
it. He was not a part of the management, no. And they were the CFO and some lower-level managers of the company. And it's simply inappropriate to hold them personally liable, particularly given how hard they tried to show that he shouldn't try to enforce his rights on the stock option.
Okay,
well,
thank you.
They were not signatories to the termination agreement.
They were not, and they don't owe the kind of duties, as we cite in our papers, to Mr. Smith that he would like to convince the court that they do.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Silverman.
Thank you.
So your time expired, Mr. Lamb, but we'll give you a minute since we tormented you with questions.
Thank you, Judge. Judge, the reason I cited 5.6 is because under Section 551 of the Restatement of Torts, Second, which I cited in the brief, it reflects the common law requirements of duty to disclose.
Now, what is your theory of relief? If they had told your client that they were going to declare bankruptcy, what would he have done?
He would have not entered into this.
Okay, and then settlement. What happens next? He refuses to enter the agreement. Then what happens?
He probably would have sued him for breach of contract of the 1999 agreements.
I didn't sue them?
Because, or to take back his patents, to rescind.
They're bankrupt.
Well, they went to Chapter 13. He didn't know they were going to go bankrupt. All he knew at the time.
No, I know. But suppose they told him they're going to go bankrupt. How would he have been better off if they had told him? Now, and you say, well, he might have sued them? Is that?
Well, they, or rescinded.
Get tens of millions of dollars.
The allegation is that if he had the stock options today.
No, but all the stock options were wiped out.
But
in bankruptcy.
Well, they were, and new stock was issued with new options, and these defendants got new options.
Why would new stock have been issued to him?
That's a good question. new stock wasn't issued to him. That's a good question. But part of what he expected to receive as consideration were these options. And it's Section 551, Judge, that I'm relying on, and this warranty creates an atmosphere where he expected
the defendants. But the warranty doesn't bind the individual.
I agree with you. It doesn't, except it creates a relationship where he expected the defendants to disclose material facts.
You say that you agree that it doesn't bind these defendants.
Contractually, but not in tort.
But not an expectation.
There is.
That can be imposed on them.
Because they are acting as agents for Dade. He is dealing in an atmosphere. It's a relationship.
Now, wait
he
a
expects.
You're saying it doesn't bind them, but.
Not contractually. No, not contractually, but in tort. In Section 701 of the Restatement Agency speaks to this about an agent's liability for his or her own torts.
Well, they didn't sign anything as agents, I don't think.
But this is a tort.
Well, how does it benefit them to not tell him about the bankruptcy? What was in it for them?
Because they knew that they would come out of the bankruptcy with their own options. That's what they knew. And their job was to cut as good a deal as they could for the company. That's
okay.
Their job.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Mr. Lehrman and Mr. Sullivan.
Thank you.